the bomb, Drebin. If you don't, I'll shoot the dame.
All right, Rocco. All right. I'll do what you say.
Frank!
Just don't harm her.
Frank, if you pull out the bomb, you'll kill me anyway. And everyone else in this theater.
Yeah, no dice, Rocco.
Then I'll plug her.
You shoot her and I'll empty this envelope.
Frank, think about it.
All right, you'll be dead.
Then you'll kill yourself and everyone here.
Yeah.
And I'll shoot you, Drebin, if you don't do as I say.
Jane?
I'd be safe. So would everyone else. But you'd be dead.
This is getting a little complicated, Rocco. Let's look at this logically. You're the psychotic. You should have the envelope. I should have the gun.
Frank!
I know what I'm doing.
I got it.
Oh, bravo.
You know, it's very important. I get the clap right.
And it's all in the execution. Yeah, you can't do that, then what do we have?
We just...
Speaking of which, this movie. Hey, everybody. Welcome back once again to Podcast Part 3, the Part 3 Podcast, your best and brightest source for all things about movies that came after two other movies. As always, I am Sam.
And I am Will.
And there is a Naked Gun movie in theaters as we speak. We saw it this weekend. It's pretty great. See it with a crowd. Liam Neeson's awesome. Pamela Anderson's awesome. It is a reboot slash requel, whatever you want to call it, of the original Naked Gun movies that started in with the short-lived TV series Police Squad, followed up with The Naked Gun from the Files of Police Squad, Naked Gun 2.5, and the movie we're talking about today, Naked Gun, no definite article, 33 1/3, the appropriately named Final Insult. And I've said many times on this program that I'm not a fan of comedy sequels. I feel like they rarely work, they're rarely funny, I rarely feel like they capture the same magic of the original as well or better. Like, they're usually, at best case scenario, a Ghostbusters 2, a Wayne's World 2. There are some exceptions, Adam's Family Values, but most of the time, it is a textbook case of diminishing returns, and comedy is harder to do than action, it is harder to do than drama, and so those diminishing returns show. This is a textbook case of that.
Yes, it is. Like you say, it is everything that a comedy sequel is. It's the textbook example of a comedy sequel. It just sort of hammers the joke over and over again, rehashes jokes from either other prior films, and just kind of keeps hammering at just random scattershot, any target it can find, mostly homophobic. Homophobia.
This is a movie that is 82 minutes of bad gay jokes alternating with what were at the time really, really topical jokes for 1994.
Yeah.
Disgruntled postal workers. Remember that? Remember that whole thing? Remember going postal? Bill Clinton, Pope John Paul II, Hurricane Andrew, Jurassic Park, Dr. Kevorkian, the Raiders being in L.A., Rodney King, L.A. having lots of gangs and crime, Thelma and Louise, Beavis and Butthead, Tanya Harding, the Buffalo Bills losing a lot, Phil Donahue. You like me. You really like me. And then two that I'm not sure about. One being the ending being a riff on The Bodyguard, because it's set at the Oscars, and I can't tell if the thing with Anna Nicole Smith is supposed to be The Crying Game or just general transphobia.
Yeah, I mean, it's so funny because, like, Ace Ventura, the first Ace Ventura, has to, like, pulls that same card, too. It's like,
Ace Ventura's plot is so much more layered and nuanced than this movie, though. If you, yes. Like, people do not talk about what an insane movie Ace Ventura Pet Detective is if you don't even include Ace Ventura in it.
It is one of the most complicated mystery movies ever made.
You could reframe it as like an erotic sports thriller, and it would work just as well. Anyway, yeah, it is just this one sets the tone for, and we're gonna get into this because I know you told me you got some thoughts on parody movies.
Yeah, I do.
This kind of parody movie, especially The Naked Gun, is obviously you think of from the Leslie Nielsen run of them, the high water marks are Airplane and the original Naked Gun. They are very, very hard to do well because it's basically it is a riff on a genre movie and it's deeply straight faced, but it has tons of visual gags, tons of comedy. The jokes come fast and furious, but when they're at their best, they're still in service of spoofing the genre. Now, this movie is just reference upon reference upon reference upon reference, which most people these days would think of as the Family Guy formula. But there was a period in the basically the 2000s, which will that there was this string of movies that sort of stem from partially the Zucker brothers, but also
scary movies.
Yeah, well, there was the Wayans started it, then the Zuckers took it over, and then there were those writers, Friedberg and Seltzer. That did the whole blank movie. So there was chick, I think it was chick movie or date movie.
There was date movie,
superhero movie.
Which actually Leslie Nielsen was in that.
Yeah,
one,
he's in a bunch of them. He's in the conservative one, An American Carol that David Zucker did with Kevin Farley. Epic movie. There's Meet the Spartans. There's Vampires Suck. They go on and on.
Most of those were released theatrically too, which is what's crazy. They weren't like direct to video slop. I mean, eventually they got there, but they were released in theaters.
But literally every single one of them is just let's joke on everything that was trending at the time the movie came out. Like, I think it's Meet the Spartans. Literally, it's just like the entire end of the movie is them just doing the Jimmy Kimmel, Sarah Silverman, I'm fucking Matt Damon, but it's I'm fucking, and it's every whatever pop culture character that showed up in the movie, like Hellboy and Britney Spears and all this shit.
Oh my god.
Like, shaved head era Britney Spears.
Right. Ay, ay, ay.
So this is better than that. I'm going to say that. Naked Gun 33 and a third is miles better than that. It's the weakest Naked Gun. It felt really long for 82 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I think this type of parody, this, you know, the shotgun blast of jokes, I think it's one of the hardest movie genres to pull off successfully. I think because, like you say, you have to have, it doesn't have to be a very, like, complicated plot, but you have to have, like, an actual plot that you can follow and an emotional arc that you can follow along with it. And when these movies don't have that, all they can fall back on is the rapid-fire jokes, which then just become either, like, reference humor or just bad, like, blue comedy. Like, in the original Naked Gun, there's a car chase, right? And Frank Drebin, you know, he commandeers a car, but it's a car in the middle of it. The driver is in the middle of their driving test, which is actually like a really funny gag and like a fun play on genre conventions, which is what these movies should do. But in this one, it's all just sort of like, it's not in service of the story. It's all just in service of the jokes. And that's asked backwards.
Yeah, it's really hard. It's like, so Airplane is a riff on the Irwin Allen disaster movie, specifically Airport. Airport 77 or whatever it was called. Naked Gun is a riff on cop shows and cop movies. Blazing Saddles is a Western. Young Frankenstein is classic universal horror. Never at any point do the best ones lose focus on everything's in favor of this. Every joke still is meant to serve the story and playing with the satire of the genre. It's never just humor for humor's sake. And there's moments in this one where you really see them just like the jokes become disconnected from the story and the satire. Like,
exactly,
this is the example I marked on is the whole sperm bank sequence.
Right.
Now, he's there undercover to get information on Anna Nicole Smith and Fred Ward and all of them. The whole thing is about him getting into the files. But the whole joke of the sequence is he jerks off a lot. And when he jerks off, it's just he jerks off like crazy. And there's crazy, silly noises that come out. And he's smoking a cigarette and he just jerks off a ton. And then it just has like a fade to him going through the files, completely independent of all the jerking off he did.
Yeah.
Shouldn't the joke be more that he needs to get to the files, but he keeps getting waylaid and made to keep giving semen samples. So then it's comedy in service of getting in the way of him being a detective, and still fuels the later he's all tapped out for date night, you know?
Right, with, exactly.
With Priscilla.
Right. I mean, yeah, and it's exactly, it should be built like an action scene almost, in that it like tells its own little story and what he's trying to do. You know, the comedy beat of him trying to get to the files is like him getting pulled into the masturbation rooms and, you know,
yeah,
the sample rooms.
But all the beats are there for a good Naked Gun movie. Like,
yeah,
like it's just so unfocused, and it's just not as funny, because I think they're going for the low hanging fruit, and they're not putting in the extra effort to like tie it back to the satire.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, and not only did the 2000s have the blank movies, I mean, the late 80s and into, like, I mean, probably into the late 90s were also littered with a bunch of Leslie Nielsen vehicles same thing.
We're glazing over it, but Leslie Nielsen, I'd say he was a dramatic actor. He was a character actor. He, before he went to comedy, he was probably best known for Forbidden Planet.
Right.
And he was the captain in the Poseidon Adventure, and he's very good at being stoic and serious, and he has this great look. Like, he's one of, like Lloyd Bridges, also in Airplane, he's one of those guys that was always old. He had, like, white hair from day one, just completely white hair. And he just is so good at the deadpan police, like stoic police detective bit. And these movies were so popular that for a time he was just making parody upon parody. And I forget how late into the 90s they went. Like,
oh man, they went, yeah, I think like 1998 was like the last
Wrongfully
one,
Accused
I think.
Is 1998. The Fugitive came out in 1993.
Yes. I mean, I remember renting Repossessed. Have you ever seen Repossessed?
Yes, I have seen I have seen most of Repossessed. It was not on DVD for years.
The parody Exorcist sequel, also starring Linda Blair and Leslie Nielsen.
He's got that. He's got Spy Hard. He's got Dracula Dead and Loving It. He's got
the Mel Brooks, yeah.
Yeah, because Mel Brooks is like the other one that was guy who was doing satires, but I feel like his were like there's a different thing going on with Young Frankenstein and Blazing Saddles.
Yes, but then he sort of got into the sort of rapid fire jokes with Robin Hood, Men in Tights, and Dracula, Dead and Loving It,
and Spaceballs,
yeah.
Yeah, I was trying to think of other ones. We were talking about this, like the ones that are the really great satires like this that are a straight laced riff on a genre, and it's like Naked Gun, Airplane, Young Frankenstein, Blazing Saddles. I really like Not Another Teen Movie, and then we completely forgot to think of that might be the best one, Wet Hot American Summer.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, that's the perfect encapsulation of these kind of movies, because it never, ever, you cannot wink to the audience. You can't look at, you cannot ask the audience to participate. This movie has to think it's serious.
Right, and also my problem with this movie too is that its jokes are so mean-spirited that I don't think it feels like the movie is like hates its characters and hates its premise and just sort of like hates itself. I think the new one sort of showcased this in contrast, because it felt like the new one was so in love with the world and just doing joke after joke, and there was like a joy to the new movie that this movie just lacked.
Well, even when he's being a fuck up and a violent, you know, idiot, you should like Frank Drebin. And
right,
even
exactly.
When he's like mowing people down in his electric car in the new one, you love Liam Neeson as Frank Drebin.
Yeah, and I mean, and that's how it works in the original Naked Gun as well. It's sort of, you're like, oh yeah, he's a dope and he's an idiot, but like he's really funny. And but this one, Naked Gun 33 1/3, just it feels so mean-spirited.
You don't like all the assorted prison sexual violence humor? You don't like you're not into that?
Not so much, no, Sam. I mean, I know it was the 90s, it was a different time, but it still doesn't work.
All right, I will say this, though. I guarantee you there's better prison rape comedy jokes in movies from that era. I guarantee you, as poorly as they've all aged, there's ones that have done it better.
Yes. The two Wayans brothers, I'm Gonna Get You Sucker and Don't Be a Menace to South Central While Drinking Your Juice in the Hood. Those are pretty good.
Oh, yeah. Those are really good, too. And yeah, I really like Not Another Teen Movie.
Yeah, and the original Scary Movie is actually not
it's all right. Either, speaking of gay panic humor, this one has a lot of stuff I like. Fred Ward, I gotta say, yes. Fred Ward's got his working boots on in this movie. Yep. He really not a guy who is known for doing a lot of comedy, but he really commits to like he's really hitting all the right satirical beats. There's that whole sequence at the end on stage at the Oscars where it's just Leslie Nielsen trying to get the gun from him and give him the bomb, where it's like, no, you're the madman, so you would be the one holding the bomb. I'm the cop, I'd be the one holding the gun. And then Fred Ward like kind of like, okay, this is getting complicated. Like, that's pretty funny. I like that a lot.
That stuff is great. And I think most of the Oscars stuff was all pretty well done.
The Mother Teresa musical feels like it was just lifted out of an episode of Monty Python's Flying Circus. I think it was the way it was shot, where like that's just Terry Jones singing it. Every one of the movies, I was just like, "Where's Jay Sherman when you need him?"
Right,
it all felt like stuff he'd review on The Critic.
I loved it. Was it Elliot Gould announcing like all the run of the movies?
Elliot Gould was great. I liked James Earl Jones showing up, Vanna White. I was like, did anyone even in 1994 know who Pia Sidorita was at that point?
Yeah, there was a lot.
What? Pia, she got the. I only know her from Santa Claus Conquers the Martians. And because of that, I know that she like kind of conned her way into a Golden Globe nomination at one point. That's all I know about her. And I was watching it, I'm like, did she do one other thing that I've forgotten about? I guess she did a lot of, she had a music career. She's sort of like just doing like old standards, as it turns out. So that's what I discovered. And I was just like, I guess they couldn't. Their first choice wasn't available. Tony Bennett wasn't available. they'd already used Robert Goulet in the second movie.
Right, yeah. And I did like, it looks like Phil Donahue vomiting into a tuba. I liked James Earl Jones saying that.
I was like, oh, he does look like Phil Donahue.
The whole run of Phil Donahue.
They really just Donahue,
really milked that.
Donahue was a much bigger deal in 1994. Donahue was top of the mountain.
Or was that like a thing? Did Leslie Nielsen always get mistaken for Phil Donahue?
I think it's just they both have
white
hair and are like kind of older dudes. Phil Donahue wouldn't have been at the Oscars any more than Leslie Nielsen would be.
And I like the Weird Al cameo.
Well,
these movies always
great. I gotta say this, and you know what? This is a hot take. Maybe I think the movie needed more O.J. Simpson.
Yeah, I think he did.
Because he's really funny in the first one and in the second one. He just doesn't get a lot to do in this one. Maybe his mind was on other things, but.
Yeah, maybe.
This movie came out in March '94. The murders were in June.
The whole supporting cast sort of gets sidelined here.
Yeah.
And that's sort of a shame. Like, George Kennedy is, like, not around as much, and
Priscilla Presley's off kind of doing her own plot line with Ellen Green for a lot of it. And it tries to become Thelma and Louise for a hot second and then gives up.
Yeah, it was like, what? Oh, okay, I guess we're done with this subplot.
It's unfocused, and that's the problem. It's having trouble holding the humor and the story and the characters together, which seem you'd think on the surface aren't that important for like a really broad tongue-in-cheek satire. But the best ones still have that. The best ones still like the characters feel well drawn and the story's compelling because you have to make the story compelling because the movie should think it's a serious movie or a serious romance or whatever. It's the tension and the drama, the stakes need to feel real to the characters, even if the characters are acting ridiculous. That's what makes Airplane work so well.
Right. I mean, and that's because I think Airplane basically has the script of that whatever airport disaster movie. It is that script.
Yeah.
So it's not even like they change it all that much. Well, they just
doing the Doctor Strangelove thing where it's just let's do Red Alert, but let's play it for comedy.
You know? Exactly. So you need that, it's been a very long time since I've seen the Hot Shots movies, but I remember Hot Shots being fairly decent of that kind.
I've
of
never
genre.
Seen the first one. I feel like I got to imagine, because the second one, when it came out, I feel like was really big.
Yeah.
And that poster was everywhere with the chicken.
with the chicken.
The chicken arrow. And I've seen the second one more recently, and it's fine, but at some point it just sort of loses. It's all about we're going to stop Saddam and, you know.
Right. Yeah.
I think maybe because of these new South Park episodes where they've got Trump they're just doing Saddam.
Right.
And so many younger people are like, why are they doing such a bad, like, why aren't they even bothering to do a Trump voice? Why is he animated like that? Why is he, you know, why is he sleeping with Satan? And other people are like, well, you got to understand, 25 years ago when South Park was on, they had Saddam, and in the movie he's in a relationship with Satan, and they animate him like that, and he talks like that, because there was this dictator in Iraq named Saddam Hussein.
I mean, I
just feel old, because I'm like, God, South Park's been on since I was in the fifth grade.
Yeah. Oh, man. No, my favorite joke in one of these movies, though, is in Hot Shots Part 2, where they're making fun of Apocalypse Now, and Charlie Sheen's on the boat, and then he gets up, and then the other boat crosses, and it's Martin Sheen,
yeah.
And they look at each other, and they go, I loved you in Wall Street!
And that's great. That's so funny, because it's breaking character on a certain level, but it's so straight-faced. It's the movies never wink at the camera. Those characters it's so hard to get right.
Yeah.
It's this campy, like, very earnest like tone. 60s Batman is like this too.
Yeah.
You have to believe the characters believe it, and that's where the comedy comes from. Otherwise it becomes just sort of, I don't know. It just feels like a mess, and that's what movie feels like.
Yeah, it just becomes a sketch. It just becomes sort of a sketch showcase, not even like a sketch movie. It just becomes a sketch showcase.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I know that these guys came out of, you know, Kentucky Fried Movie and Kentucky Fried Theater, you know, and so that's kind of their bread and butter. But even like Kentucky Fried Movie, it's like contained sketches.
Yeah.
In, but
you know, it's an anthology, you know, and that works a lot better. That's like, you know, that's just, that comes out of the world of sketch comedy. That's Monty Python. That's SNL.
Yeah.
You know, I think this one just tells jokes, and you don't really get why is this the joke? But even the title, like 33 and a third is a reference to like records. The movie's not about music or the music business. It ends at the Oscars, not the Grammys, you know. It's just like, okay, I guess, yeah, 2.5, 33 and a third, I guess makes sense, but
yeah, I mean,
I don't know.
Maybe
I'm being too cold and analytical about this stuff, but I just think there's a reason why no one goes pointing back to this one over the original.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the 33 and a third is like a joke on, like, at the time, so many numbered sequels coming out, but I don't know. It seems
joke doesn't work in 2025 because everything's a numbered sequel.
Yeah, well, yeah, everything. Well, everything is a sequel. It just doesn't have a number on it, for the most part. But
that's true. Hey, no, nobody two.
Nobody two.
Highest,
true.
Highest two, lowest.
You're fired. You're so fired.
Jungle two, jungle.
That wasn't even a sequel. It wasn't.
Nos 482. I can keep going.
Fantastic Four stick. Fan Four stick.
Fan Four stick.
Yeah.
Tritoon. I think for a while they tried to wedge the two into the middle of Tron.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, that was a bad idea. I'm glad they changed that.
Yeah. Well, don't worry. They got another chance now. They're going to get another chance to get it right.
Put
a three in Aries. And, you know.
The E. They'll use the three as the E.
Well, I guess we're going to be talking about that in October.
Yeah. Yes, we will.
Get back. Let's keep going, folks. Gotta keep trying.
I swear, and we'll get to it in October, but I am convinced that there is one Disney executive who is like, I think he's very nice, and I think they're very nice, and I think that they have managed to survive, you know, several rounds of layoffs over the decades. Tron was their favorite movie when they were a kid, and by gum, they are going to make Tron happen.
It's so funny with Tron, because it is none of them, neither of them Trons. Tron is... It is a franchise in that there is like a couple of games and there's comics and there's two feature films, neither of which were terribly successful.
Right.
I don't know. This one, though, I'm not seeing, like, there is no hype train for it.
Yeah, I think everyone's just excited about the Nine Inch Nails soundtrack. I think that's kind of all they got going.
I don't know enough I know one Nine Inch Nails song, and when I hear it in my head, it's a Johnny Cash song. It's just not a band that is not on my... I did not have that on my CDR, you know.
Yeah, but the Trent Reznor scores and... You know.
Oh, that's true, yeah. You know. Okay. Well, but it'll have a great soundtrack.
I mean, that's kind of what all these movies have. But, you know, the third entry finally gets its Beastmaster Adventures in Time, or whatever that fucking movie's called, where it's like, they don't really want to blow the budget staying in the fantasy world, so they come to the real world.
Master of the Universe style, baby.
Exactly.
I mean...
Exactly.
Yeah, and that's the reason why some of these movies, the movies that try to get, like, try to do, like, a sci-fi riff or a fantasy riff usually fall on their face, because... you have to make it look like the genre.
Right. That's expensive. Yeah. And these movies usually don't have the budget. I mean, I think the one that came the closest in terms of the look was Your Highness. But I think the problem with that movie is that they didn't take it serious. They didn't take the story seriously enough to make the jokes land.
No, that one just doesn't work. It should have worked, I think.
Well, and it's because everyone, it feels like everyone's winking at the camera the whole time. Yeah. No one's playing it straight.
Yeah, no, so. James Franco isn't going to play it earnest.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
He's going to be like, I mean, he plays all his roles like, this is so dumb, you know.
Yeah.
He's talking, these apes, these smart apes are so dumb. this pie is so good, I'm going to kill Spider-Man.
I mean, him as, like, sleazy douchebag Harry Osborn is pretty good, I thought, but...
I mean, but yeah,
but,
sure.
But no, but but you have Danny McBride and James Franco in Your Highness, and they... I mean, they're just winking at the camera the whole time, and it feels like they're telling jokes.
The problem is also when you cast comedy actors as the leads, it doesn't work as well. Leslie Nielsen started this whole thing as a drama actor. Liam Neeson's done some comedies. We know he's a funny guy, but you don't think of Liam Neeson as a comedic actor. You think of him as, like, Oscar dramas and pretty serious action movies.
Right.
And that's why he works so well as the new Frank Drebin, because he's so serious and deadpan about it all.
Exactly, yeah, he can play that, and just like Leslie Nielsen did when he started in Airplane. It's like, it really is playing against what we know him as, and and that's what works. And you buy it, because he also plays like as you said, he's feeling the stakes. The stakes matter to him. But, you know, again, just going back to Your Highness, and everyone's also talking in modern language, and they're saying a lot of fucks, which I don't have a problem with, except in that movie, when it doesn't make sense for them to say
that. A parody has to basically be, it's got to look like Game of Thrones, and it's got to be filled with Game of Thrones actors.
Exactly.
Like, it's got to be like Charles dances in Your Highness. He's got to be like, it's got to be actors of his caliber.
Yeah, and they've got to be playing it totally straight, because then you can lay in your, you know, where they have to castrate the Minotaur or whatever.
Exactly,
you know,
yeah.
And all that stuff. But it's like, when you have James Franco jerking off a Yoda-like puppet, it doesn't work.
Yeah. Whereas if Liam Neeson's doing it, it works.
Right, exactly.
If Daniel Day-Lewis was in Your Highness,
yes.
Which would then lead him to play... Tommy Wiseau in Disaster Artist. If Daniel Day-Lewis had played all of James Franco's parts for the last 20 years, all of those movies would be infinitely better, even if you didn't change a word of the scripts.
Yeah, no, I think you're right.
So
I think you're right.
I'm holding you accountable, Daniel Day-Lewis, for not opening yourself up to the likes of Oz the Great and Powerful or 127 Hours.
Can you imagine Daniel Day-Lewis in Pineapple Express?
Yes! Absolutely! It would be like that movie that's coming out with Austin Butler and Matt Smith. It's just Daniel Day-Lewis as like the weird British neighbor. Yes. That's the thing with Daniel Day-Lewis. He's not inaccessible to as an actor to picture in things. Because also we know he has insane range.
That's true.
So yes, true. I want him in A Planet of the Apes. Yes, I want him in Your Highness. I want him in Pineapple Express as the stoner weed dealer in a bad action parody.
It's kind of funny because I was thinking about like sort of the scale of parody movies and stuff. Because you have on one end, you have the Naked Gun, Police Squad, Airplane, that kind of stuff. And then on the other, you have something like Hot Fuzz, which is a satire and a parody, but also trying to be the thing that it's parodying, too. Which is a whole nother level of difficulty, I think, but...
It's a question of how well do you want to do that stuff.
Right.
Like, the Naked Gun movies, I wouldn't say have, like, great action, because it's the badness of their action sequences is part of the comedy.
Yeah.
Like, they lean more towards the slapstick, whereas Hot Fuzz has legitimately great action sequences... Even though it's a riff on action movies, I think it's just it's a question of commitment. It's like if you're going to make a Robin Hood parody like Men in Tights, are the sword fights going to be really good and the comedy come from somewhere else? Or here's the best example: Jackie Chan movies.
Right. Yeah.
They're almost all, like, for a long time, they were all comedies. They weren't satires per se, but they were comedic. But the action was still really, really good.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I think, and that's sort of Edgar Wright sort of taking a lot of his style from, you know, Hong Kong.
Well, I think he genuinely loves those genres, because it's the same with Shaun of the Dead. He's making a legit zombie movie.
Right.
You know, it's again, you have to have, you cannot ever at any point abandon your commitment to the genre that you're riffing on.
Yeah.
So it's always got to be a cop movie. It's always still got to be a disaster movie. It's always got to be a summer camp comedy that you're like an 80s summer camp movie. You know, it can never get when they get too far away from that. And I think the longer a specific series of these goes on, like Naked Gun or the Wet Hot American Summer TV stuff
or a Scary Movie, even
or Scary. Or Scary Movie. It loses focus and it becomes a series of vignettes. And also you can't do that now because Family Guy has done it better for almost 30 years. So,
Jesus, yeah. Oh, you know what just occurred to me, Sam, as a good example of one of these? Black Dynamite.
Yes. Oh my God.
Black Dynamite. How did we forget that one?
We forgot about Black. I mean, there's like a lot of good ones, but they all commit. Black Dynamite really commits.
Really commits.
Because it's also trying to be a poorly made movie, and that's really hard to do.
Yeah.
Garth Marenghi.
Garth Marenghi's
Dark Place. The series with Rashida Jones, Angie Tribeca. That was just doing Police Squad, and they did a very good job with it. But it's like, you know, you just, at some point, that comedic style, it only works over, like, kind of a sprint, as opposed to, like, seasons and seasons or 3-4 movies. So, you know, Garth Marenghi's Dark Place is perfect because it's only 6 episodes, and they're all brilliant. And the characters in it all genuinely believe what you're watching is magnificently made.
Right, yeah. Yeah, well, and that also has the conceit, and Black Dynamite kind of has it too in the margins, but you're watching a thing that somebody has made. Like, it's not like a real show. It's not like a parody show. It's like a show within a show. I don't know
I think it's adding to the commitment to the satire that you're having these interviews with, like, the author and the lead actor and the producer, who all think they did something truly great. Like, in their mind, you're not watching a comedy, you're watching a hospital horror Stephen King style show.
Right.
So I think it's just, that's just a layer you add to the commitment to the satire.
Yeah, but like you say, it adds sort of a level of difficulty, because then you have to make something look bad on purpose and not just look bad.
Yeah, well, that's just a technical achievement.
Yeah. So, I mean, Naked Gun 33 1/3, Sam, 1 out of 3. How would you rate it?
this is not a reflection on the franchise as a whole or the work of the great Sir Leslie Nielsen. I gotta go with a one. It's a one. I'm sorry. It's just
I
points for being short, but I've watched better short movies.
Yeah, and I mean that the problem with these parody movies is when they're bad, 90 minutes can feel like a year.
This is the problem with bad comedy in general. A bad horror movie is still going to have gore and boobs. A bad action movie is still going to have an old car blow up. Bad comedy. If it's bad, it means it's because the thing that is supposed to be fueling the movie is bad, so the movie has nothing.
Yeah, I would agree. I think
there is a reason why if you ever look at the like movies that are so bad it's good, they're never going to have comedies on there.
Yeah.
Because it's all unintentional humor.
Yeah, yeah. That's why MST3K never riffed comedies.
And when they tried, like, there's a few, like Catalina Caper and things like that, where they try and it just doesn't work. It's like they had an easier time riffing on Hamlet when they did it.
Yeah.
I remember listening, I think it was, like, Kevin Murphy or someone talking about how they had to do Hamlet for that one episode. And they were like, the problem is, even, like, a bad German made-for-TV one, you get sucked in because it's still Hamlet, you know?
Yeah. No, I would give it a one, maybe a 1/33 1/3.
Oh, God damn you. That doesn't even work, Will.
I had to
one and a third.
Yeah. I had to do it. It was the title of the movie.
I know, and you're doing bad comedy. You're doing a parody or a satire. I will confess, it's been a long time since I took a theater theory class. I'm probably using satire and parody interchangeably, and I know I'm not supposed to. And I'm sorry on one level, but on another level, I don't care.
Well, the makers of this movie really didn't care all that much.
Yeah, that's
the
thing.
Everyone felt like they were phoning it in on this one.
Yeah, why do I have to hold myself to a higher standard?
The movie certainly isn't.
Well, I guess we got a couple new movies coming out soon that have threequels or are threequels. But before then, this is stay topical. Zach Cregger's got a new movie out. Weapons. It's getting great reviews. So I thought I'd jump ahead to his next movie that he's signed on to do, and in turn, jump back to talk about the prior iteration of this franchise. Will, we're doing Resident Evil 3.
All right! Yeah!
Yes. Resident Evil, I think this is Extinction, the one with the most sand.
Post-apocalyptic Las Vegas, here we come, baby. CGI birds, psychic. Psychic powers. All right. Here we are.
This is a franchise where multiple installments of it have put me to sleep. I've seen the first 5 minutes of the first one and fallen asleep so many times because it used to be on Encore at like 1 a.m. when I was in high school.
The Resident Evil movies are amazing in that they are so committed to their lore that by the time you get to like the fourth one, you're like, what the fuck is happening?
It's so committed to a lore that could not be further from the franchise lore that's already established.
And it's like, even more than the Underworld series, this is like the ultimate wife guy movie. It's like...
It's
awesome.
It is far and away the most successful video game based franchise. Do not mistake that for a mark of quality. Yeah. Will is being served up a nice little cheese board here. And yeah.
Was it one night when we were bored in our, what was it, the apartment?
We debated watching,
it was
a toss-up between the Maltese Falcon and Resident Evil Apocalypse, and we chose Resident Evil Apocalypse, which was longer and more boring and worse. I mean, I didn't need to revisit the Maltese Falcon to confirm that. I just know that we made from a... By any measure beyond I want to see a giant zombie with a bazooka, you know, that's the only thing that it has over the Maltese Falcon.
Yes. All right. Well, that'll be fun. But we'll have
we'll have a good chuckle over that. It is a franchise, and it ran for a long time, and when that one end, that series ended, they haven't quite been able to jumpstart it again. This is actually going to be the third try. Zach Cregger's one that he signed on to for next year, I guess.
Yeah, so wait, so there was, because there was a movie, there was a reboot,
there was,
right?
Welcome to Raccoon City, which had like Kaius Scodelario and Neil McDonough were in it, and then there was a TV series.
Right, on Netflix.
And that didn't really go anywhere, so this is take three. This will be the fourth reboot of the franchise.
God, that's so crazy, because there's like seven of those original movies that, like, how did they crank those? I don't, anyway.
Because Paul
W.S. Anderson.
W.S. Anderson. God damn it.
Not the other Paul Anderson.
Paul W.S. Anderson cared about his property that he was taking, he was custodian of.
Yeah, man.
And Mia Jovovich, she is an action lead, you know?
She managed to do it.
She never walked away. There's no oddball one in there that she's not in. She's
in every single one.
You know,
front and center.
That is commitment.
Man. Well, that'll be fun. Post-apocalyptic, zombie Las Vegas, Mila Jovovich, psychic powers, Russell Mulcahy,
Russell Mulcahy.
We've covered Paul W.S. Anderson, but
this one's going to look like really good. It's like shockingly well shot, as I recall. And that's right. It is Russell Mulcahy.
Yeah.
All right. Another bad comedy.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that, yeah, not much to say about Naked Gun 33 and a third, but, you know, I think when it comes to the kind of parody satire movies, there is a science to it, and it's kind of fun to dig into that and find out which ones work. And if you haven't, see the new one. See it with a crowd, because, like, Hollywood has just took the mid-budget comedy out behind the barn and shot it a few years ago, and to see one of these in the theater is so much fun. The crowd was so into it. So
yeah,
go.
Everyone was laughing, and it's a blast.
Like, these are the movies that are supposed to be in theaters. Absolutely. Yeah. Like, for sure. And I had such a good time.
Me too.
All right.
Me too.
Well, Will, speaking of good times, this was a good time.
Always a good time talking movies and digging into a comedy with you.
Taking a comedy and coldly dissecting it on the table. That is what writers do. If you wonder why we're always in a bad mood, that's part of it.
Never see how the sausage is made, and never see how comedy is made.
We cannot laugh, for we gave all our laughs to others. Well, until then, folks, have a great night, and we'll see you next time for Resident Evil Extinction. It's Extinction, right?
Yes, it's Extinction. Okay, it should be Apocalypse, but yes, it's Extinction.
No, if I watch Afterlife by mistake, I'm going to be so annoyed.
Wait, hang on. Let me look this up.
No,
let's
it is.
Sure.
It's Extinction. It's Resident Evil Extinction is the third Resident Evil. Age of Extinction is the fourth Transformers.
Right. Yes, you got it. There, okay. Yeah. It's Extinction.
We haven't gotten to those yet.
And it looks like it is currently on Netflix and Hulu.
Ooh.
Or Hulu. Yeah. So seems like it's easy to watch.
Obviously, we both own it in 4K, so that's not a problem. All right. Well, something to look forward to. What have I gotten myself into?
Nothing good, Sam. It's never good when you choose one that's going to make me happy.
But I've made you happy, and that's good.
Well, there you go.
So there you go. All right. Well, folks, y'all have a good night. Like, subscribe, review, and we will see you again next time.
Adios.
Bye.